Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Calibrating Your Compass, a deep dive into our leadership competencies here at JJ Taylor from the minds that helped bring them forward. I have, of course, Bob and Matt Briggs with me here. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, and we're glad to be back for another installment. This week, we're going to be talking about communicates effectively and all the things that go along with making sure that communication is effective in all the many various ways that we communicate with our teams. So, Bob, Matt, welcome back for another installment. Glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Jeff. Looking forward to the conversation.
Looking forward to it, Jeff. Glad to be here again.
Well, let's dive right in because this is our number two leadership competency on the list. Of course, our first was instills trust. Competency number two, communicates effectively. And you know, as we talked about at the beginning of all this, you know, these are in an order for a reason. Communication is at the, you know, high on the list because communication really enables so much of all these others. You know, when we talk about in the future change and teams and results, they really all start with the ability to communicate expectations, communicate values, communicate what we're looking for from our people. If there isn't solid, effective communication, I feel like it really hampers all the rest of these. So is it fair to say you think that communication really is the catalyst that allows all these other competencies to flourish?
It really is, Jeff. But, you know, as we talked last time when we were discussing trust is the foundation. But certainly communications is a close second. And that's why we cover these two first. And if we've got that good foundation of understanding how to build trust and then how to communicate effectively, we've built a rock solid foundation that we can then build the rest of the competencies on.
Yeah, I agree, Bob. Jeff, there's a great TED Talk out there on YouTube. I'll have to send the link and you can share it with the team sometime. But what it compares communication to, sometimes we think it's like we're playing catch with a baseball. You and I are playing catch. We're throwing a baseball back to one another. When I throw the baseball, you catch it, and it's still a baseball. Communication is not exactly like that. It's really like holding a ball of clay. And when I grip it in my hand, I mold it, shape it, form it one way. When I throw it to you, you catch it. It's folded, shaped, molded differently. And that's kind of how communication is, right? It's we think I'm delivering a message that you're hearing the same way I'm delivering it, and that's not always the case. And so it's a little bit more complex than just playing catch with a baseball.
That's such a great analogy, Matt, because you're exactly right. It's every time the message changes hands, we're going to put our own stamp on our own thumbprint on it. It's going to change just a bit. And the goal, of course, is to keep it as intact and as original as possible so we don't end up with some blob that looks like something it was never intended to be by the time the message gets down the line. What a great metaphor for it. Absolutely. Our leadership competency talks a lot about, you know, it starts really with being able to express oneself clearly, both when writing and speaking. And I think today more than ever with, you know, the advances in communication from a technology standpoint, you know, people get lost in this kind of idea that what does effective communication mean across, whether it's, is it when I use a text message versus is it when I send an email? Is it when I make a phone call? But I think when we're talking about communicating effectively, there's both the element of when and how to use the right platform, but also some universal things that no matter the platform, you really need to make sure you get right. So before we dive into any details or specifics about when to use platforms or what platforms might be better or worse in what situations, why don't we start by throwing down some ideas around what are just some of the things that all good communication has in common, regardless of what I'm trying to get to across to people? There are certainly got to be some rules, right, that will help us make sure any communication is effective. Suggestions or ideas or thoughts on what some of those might be?
Yeah, there really are two critical components of communication. The first one is clarity. You know, it's really important that we communicate in such a way that people really know what to do right now. We have goals and objectives, we have strategies, but the bottom line of communication is that we want to communicate what needs to be done right now across the organization. We want everybody, our goal at least, is that everybody that comes to work every day, we want them to be absolutely clear on what they need to do at that moment. And both day to day, week to week, month to month, And so the first half of communication, and it is the first half, is just making sure that people understand what to do. The second piece of communication is, of course, listening. And it's a skill set that has to be developed. I don't run across maybe one leader in 100 that is good at listening. But if we don't develop the skill of listening and learning, we really don't know what's going on in our organization. And if we don't, we don't make good decisions. So two critical elements of communication would be, one, first is clarity. What am I communicating to my people so that they know exactly what to do right now? Second thing is, am I listening and learning from my people, from my bosses, from my peers, from my customers, so that I understand what's going on so that I can make good business decisions?
So yeah, one thing to add to that, Bob and Jeff, from a leadership perspective, you know, a leader's primary role on clarity is to seek to remove confusion by driving for that clarity. And a lot of times it really is about mutual understanding and three ways we can drive clarity as leaders and then as anybody on the team. You know, hey, we need to be honest when we don't understand what somebody is asking us to do or what someone is communicating to us. And then we got to get good at making it a habit to summarize, you know, repeat back, you know, hey, this is what I think I'm hearing you say, or what I hear you say is, or let me just confirm. Little things like that, it's silly and can be annoying, but there's so many times when we do that, the person, this is what I was saying. And so that is a good habit to form. And then really to humbly ask people, hey, could you summarize what you just heard me say? Or could you repeat back? Or, hey, are you hearing me say this? And so just three easy things we can do to drive that clarity that Bob talked about is really critical. And it's little things that we have to do to make that part of our speech and our habit, but it makes a big difference if we get good at those habits.
Habit is definitely a big part of, I think, a theme that we're going to see throughout as we talk about these. But when it comes to communication especially, I think habit is such a powerful piece to talk about, Matt. And you're exactly right, because good communication starts by making communication a habit. Oftentimes, some of the leaders I see who struggle with communicating the most, it's because they don't have a habit of communicating with their teams. You know, they communicate with their teams when they think they need to, right? There's a problem today. I'm dealing with this issue. Let me pick up the phone when this happens. And I am constantly trying to impart upon managers that you need to make communication an ongoing, regular thing with your team, whether there's a reason to or not. Have those placeholder meetings on the calendar. Have time set aside once a week, because that will allow you to, A, get better at something. With practice and repetition comes, you know, mastery. But B, also make sure that things don't fall through the cracks because they weren't important enough at the moment. And I think building the habits around communication are hugely important, whether it's the habit of learning to always ask for clarification or always give clarification, or even just the habit of, we have a regular time and place than we talk. Habit, I think, is a huge piece of making communication effective, that people get in the habit of communicating with each other, get into the habit of saying, I need to pick up the phone and include this person, or I need to CC this person on an email. Because so often a lot of, again, communication issues that we hear about fall into the simple fact of somebody was left out of the loop. And it's because we don't have that habit of including the right people, and we're only thinking about the problem at hand. So I love that idea of building habits around communication. That's a really powerful piece.
I think building on that, Jeff, is, and you mentioned it briefly, but it's critical that every manager meet with each one of their direct reports at least weekly. And really, there are two objectives in that meeting. Number one is, you know, what are your top priorities this week? Usually no more than three. And how can I help? And it's not a 45-minute coaching session, but it really is maybe 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, just to touch base, just to make sure that your direct reports understand what they're supposed to do today and tomorrow. And it's a critical part of building some structure into how you communicate to again make sure that there's clarity. One of the things that creates stress in an organization, and it's rampant today, is people that feel overwhelmed. And the reason that they feel overwhelmed is because they've got a to-do list of maybe 15 items they're not clear on the priorities, and so they get stressed out over what to do. They start multitasking, which is a very inefficient way to get work done. So what the boss needs to do is, you know, hey, let's meet for 10 minutes Monday morning. I'd like to hear from you. What are your top three priorities, and how can I help you make sure you get those things done? Now, what happens on Wednesday if something blows up? Well, that's a big deal, because we know with the pace of play, with the changes that occur in businesses, something may happen on Wednesday that might impact those top three. So you've got to coach your people to say, hey, if something changes that you can't stay focused on your top three, let's talk. Come back to me. Let's visit. If you've got something that is critical that has to be handled, great. But that gives the leader an option, the option to be able to say, you know, hey, I know that's important, but it's not as important as our top three. Let's stay focused on our top three, or let's delegate that to someone else in the organization that may have some bandwidth. But maintaining that clarity with your folks day to day, week to week, is a very important part of the process. And we talked to so many leaders that don't understand the importance of formal weekly meetings on the to-do list. And I guarantee you, if you'll spend a few minutes doing that with your direct reports, you'll actually be able to work more efficiently. You'll be able to speed up, which is the idea here, and you can lower the stress level in your organization significantly.
Well, it also creates a placeholder for issues that might be important but not urgent. This is one that I preach this too, Bob. I've been telling all of our leaders for years now that if you don't have a regular weekly meeting with your teams, you're missing a huge opportunity. And it's in part because you need that clarity and the reset of expectations and that calibration each week. It's also because if you don't have a placeholder on the calendar for things that are important but not necessarily urgent, everything becomes urgent. And I always try to stress this to managers. Like, if your phone is ringing nonstop day in and day out with every little thing that pops up in your employee's world, it's because you haven't given them a place to put the stuff that, while important, isn't urgent. And with no place to put it, they will put it right on the top of the list because it's important. And so having a weekly meeting, if it does nothing else, if I can't sell you any other way as a manager, let me sell you on this. If you have a weekly meeting scheduled and on the calendar, it will reduce the number of phone calls you are taking every day, because things that can wait till that meeting will start waiting till that meeting. Because employees who know what their top three are and see something come in that isn't in the top three will go, you know what, this can wait till the next time we talk. And since there is a next time we talk, it'll wait, because otherwise they're going to call you right now and make you recalibrate it right now and make you decide on its importance right now. And that's how our managers end up swamped with a just nonstop barrage of, where do I put this? What do I do with this? Having that place on the calendar creates a container for all the stuff we need to make sure is getting done in a week. And it's good for follow-up and it's good for calibration, but it's also good for holding on to issues that may be important but don't necessarily have that urgency that should knock us off our day.
Well, one of the biggest problems we see in our work is our managers that live in overwhelmed mode all of the time. It's unsustainable. It creates all kinds of problems, you know, whether it's performance or health problems or family problems. But, you know, if you keep your people, your leaders, in a situation where they just don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, there's no way that they can handle their workload. A lot of bad things can really happen. So absolutely agree with you, Jeff, that these weekly meetings and maintaining the clarity around the things that are most important, and also clarity on those things that maybe are not most important, is very critical in terms of being able to create an environment for people where they can do their best work. And if you can turn people loose with a short list of things that they know that they can accomplish, things go much, much faster. If you want to slow things down and create some confusion around the priorities and let people deal with that to-do list of, you know, 15 or 20 items.
Well, and I think that's an interesting place to bounce off of too, because you're absolutely right, Bob. The clarity thing is so important. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, which is, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And I think this is a challenge that a lot of managers have sometimes, when it comes to communicating priorities, communicating the top three, is that if they don't know, if you as a leader don't understand your own priorities or the company's priorities or the, you know, the department's priorities, if you don't know it, you have no chance of explaining it to your teams and to anybody else. And so there is almost a step before the step where we do expect our managers to explain and clarify for our teams. But in order to do that, they better have a good understanding themselves. And I think that's another piece that sometimes people who are not communicating clearly, it's because they themselves don't have a good enough handle on what it is they're trying to communicate.
And that's good, Jeff. You know, and how do you become a better listener? You ask questions, right? And so if you don't understand something, whether you're a leader, no matter where you're on the organization, ask some questions for clarification, and then you have that opportunity to listen. And so modeling that for people, not being afraid to raise their hand and speak up and say, hey, I'm a little confused on this. And that in general, we do more of that. There's going to be more clarity and more understanding, but it starts with asking questions when we don't understand, and then active listening, not waiting to rebut and hearing out, because usually it's that ball of clay that gets a little molded that's different from what the deliverer was trying to send.
You know, where a lot of that starts is in the executive suite. And in the coaching, executive coaching that I do, I almost always have to have a conversation or many conversations with leaders about pace. So somebody that's in the C-suite feels tremendous pressure to compete, to be able to create competitive advantage. Usually how that results is that they try to do too many things too fast. And of course, we know that that flows downhill. Way better, way faster, way more effective to focus on the things that are most important and communicate those things down through the organization rather than having too many projects in too short a time frame. I see all kinds of confusion and stress caused by C-suite executives that are trying to push their organizations faster than they can go. In other words, outkicking their coverage. And when you outkick your coverage, you create all kinds of confusion.
Guaranteed fumble in that scenario. I think that you're exactly right. And that leads us into, and Matt, thank you for taking us there too, because I think it's exactly right, is if you want to be a better understander, you got to start by being a better listener. And Bob, that goes right back to what you said at the top. So if clarity is important and listening is important, it is a cycle, right? There's no cart before the horse. You've got to be creating clarity, but it really starts with you got to be listening for understanding and getting that right, and then communicating that back and then checking on that. And so let's shift onto that side of the circle for a second and talk about the active listening piece. Because Bob, I think importantly to what you were just saying, when it comes to the C-suite driving the team or any level driving the team, if you're not, it's one thing if you think you're doing a great job, here are my priorities, here's what I want you guys working on, here's what I want you to get focused. Great. But if you aren't also listening, getting the feedback and making sure that whatever you've put out is coming back correctly or is not overwhelming the team, if you don't have that listening piece, having perfect clarity about what you want is kind of irrelevant if what you want is unreasonable, undoable, or if the team is trying to tell you no and you're not hearing the message.
I couldn't agree with you more. The bad news with all of this is that none of us are good listeners. And we basically have to fess up that we're not. The things that got us there, our ability to get things done, are not consistent with doing a good job of listening. And what leaders, especially senior leaders, need to understand is that all of the information they get is filtered. And by the time you get to the executive suite, and we call it the iceberg of ignorance, the folks that are running the company really don't know a whole lot about what's going on unless they're very intentional about certain activities that allow them to learn what's going on. And so when the top people stay isolated, they stay in their offices, they stay in the executive suite, it really will cause huge problems in the organization because they're out of touch. So, you know, one of the things that we teach our top executives is that you've got to stay visible. You've got to be out and about with your people, with your customers. You've got to conduct skip meetings. You've got to make sure that you're communicating with both your people and your customers. And if you're intentional about that, you have a better chance of knowing what's going on and therefore making better business decisions. But it's something that just about all of us have to work very hard at to be even average at it. And it just takes it just takes monumental effort. I'll tell you a quick story. One of the CEOs that I coach, he's gotten very intentional about his ability to listen and understand what's going on in the organization. So he comes to work every morning with 8 quarters in his left pocket. And every time he asks someone, what do you think? Okay, what do you think? Pretty simple. He'll take a quarter out of his left pocket and put it in his right pocket. And his goal by the end of each day is to have 8 quarters in his right pocket. That's his little tool he uses to make sure that he's listening to his organization.
And Bob, you know, not just with it, that's a great story, and it matters for executives, and it matters for frontline supervisors too. Whether you're supervising the drivers or out in the warehouse, if you're not visible, you can't listen, right? If you're not out with your people, if you're not on the phone with them, if you're not face to face with them, you can't listen very well via text and email. And so, Jeff, I'm sure we're gonna talk a little bit about that at some point, but so critical to all of that. It's called the Moravian concept, and there's people way smarter that have studied this than I, but essentially, if you look at communication, only 7% of it is the actual words we say. Roughly 55% of it is body language. Another 38 to 40% is tone. And so if we're only texting or emailing all the time, people can't pick up the message we're saying. They can't listen well, because our body language affects that big time. Our tone affects that big time. And so we have to make sure we're using the right forums, asking those questions at no matter what level we are. And so being visible and accessible to our people gives us more opportunities to ask questions and then turn our responses off and listen for understanding.
I love that you bring that up, Matt, because I completely agree. And we do teach this piece as well, that when it comes to receiving a message, particularly any message that has an emotion in it, and spoiler alert, they all have emotions in them. Anytime we're receiving an emotional message, we're getting 90%+ of that through tone of voice and body language. It's not coming from the actual words. It's coming from all of the other cues. And that is not some magic secret sauce thing that you got to worry about. That's literally just the result of human evolution and biology. Like, that's just how we adapted, was to leverage as many senses as we could. And, you know, the sounds, the sight, the presence is, you know, those are great inputs as a species. So we've learned to pick up on them. And in their absence, things get lost. And I think if there's something we've all learned in the last year or so, having to have communicated and been more remote than we've ever been, it's just how quickly context and intent gets lost when we're limited to nothing more than text on a page or a text message or an email. And that's why in our leadership competency communicates effectively, we specifically say makes face-to-face communication a priority, right? Not that it has to be exclusively, but we understand that whenever possible, we want to put that context of tone of voice and look. And so, you know, we try to teach our managers that, hey, you know, first of all, the more emotional the message, the more you have to include these things, right? So I'm never going to give somebody bad news in a text message, because there's no context in that, whether it's letting them realize that I'm upset or just the simple act of showing empathy. I can't communicate that on a page. So the more emotional the message, the more I need those pieces. And that's where it becomes a step in process of prioritize it. If you can't see them face to face, get on a video call. If you can't get on a video call, get on a voice call. And if you have no other options, then maybe down the line. But, you know, in a world where we have all these new options for communication more than ever, and where, you know, as we deal with a younger and younger workforce population whose preferences tend to run towards, oh, just shoot me a text message, how do we as leaders make sure that we keep that emotion, that context, that empathy in the message when maybe we're more and more limited by certain types of message delivery systems?
Another quick CEO story. Somebody that I coach got so tired of his organization trying to run their businesses by email, he sent out an email to all of his key leaders And he said, look, folks, if you send me an email that has more than three sentences in it, I'll delete it. Okay. If you have something to say to me, come see me. And I have to say, there's a, I can think of at least one executive that does that very well, and his name's John Taylor.
John is the king of the succinct message, yes.
If you want to communicate with John, you better talk to him. Don't send him an email.
You can send him an email. It just has to be very to the point, because to your point, Bob, the first you, but it, you know, some of that is it's the context, and some of that is, you know, it's the time save of, you know, how much do I really want to have to get through this? But the flip side of that is just as true. If you're sending out a novel in your email, what are the chances that the person on the other end of that are going to read the whole thing? And when we talk about communicating effectively, you've got to be able to, as a manager, balance the amount of information and the format and understand that, yeah, if it's a long thing, probably better to pick up the phone, because what are the odds anybody's going to read past the first paragraph, really probably the first few sentences, of an email like that, you know? And if I'm using a text, it better not be a novel, because those, you know, it's going to take the whole page and I don't want multiple bubbles showing up. That's ridiculous. So I think that's a big part of how we might manage this in a modern era, is pick the right format for the right message.
And I think, Jeff, on that, you know, we have to continue as leaders to set that as an expectation, because as generations are getting younger and people are coming up that were born with an iPhone in their hand and they send texts and they communicate through social media and Instagram and Snapchat and all these things, right? If we don't continue to change that behavior and say, hey, text messages are fine for A, B, and C, emails are fine for A, B, and C, they will do that if we don't correct it. And so, not saying we stay old school with everything, but all these reasons why communication gets fuzzy is because we can't read the tone, we can't understand the message, we don't see the body language. And so as leaders, it's important to resist the temptation to adapt in certain situations like this. Other areas, we want to adapt to new technology. But with communication, it's timeless. Yeah, there are effective tools. Email is an effective tool. It's great for recapping facts, recapping commitments, short and sweet things, attachments, data. But bad news, conflict, debating ideas, confusing things, complex things, phone call and in person will always trump any type of other media that comes up in the future or anything that we have today.
Yeah, I always like to say there's nothing less effective than trying to coordinate a lunch order over email. Right? Where do you guys want to go to lunch? Don't put that in email, because by the time the first reply gets back and the next person says no to that and the third one comes in and then somebody forgot to hit reply all and nobody knows where everybody's going and what they want. It's, you know, there are times when that call makes more sense, and especially when a decision has to be made or when an emotional message has to be communicated, that is the time for a more direct conversation. If speed matters, get direct. The number of people who try to use email like instant messenger is it's infuriating. It drives me nuts. I will get to your email when I can get to it, right? Email should be for non-urgent, non-priority. If it's more important than that, find a more instant way to connect. But this is the challenge. And as leaders, we are in that seat of having to decide what these things are. But to your point, Matt, I think a lot of that comes from expectations. As a leader, you need to decide what the rules of engagement are for your team, and you need to set that forward. This is when it's appropriate to text. This is when it's appropriate to email. This is when I expect a phone call, because otherwise, your team's going to do what comes comfortable to them or natural to them, and it isn't necessarily, they're not all going to have the instincts we want them to have. They're not always going to get it right on their own. You have to coach, especially young team members, and not just young in age, but young in, you know, knowing what they're doing and being in the role, or even just young in the sense of you're new to our company. So we have to culturally assimilate you in and teach you that in our company, in our department, this is how we communicate. I think that's a huge part of making effective communication happen.
One last thought on email. It's just, it's always amazing to me the number of people that I see, groups of managers, teams, trying to solve a problem with email. And what happens is you get these email strings that are 2 feet long, and they've been going on for days, And every time you get an email, you've got to read through the previous 10 or 12 emails. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to me that people just don't seem to be able to figure out that that's a very poor way to solve a problem. And, you know, I guess the other thought is that so many people, spend so much time sitting in front of a computer screen doing email that it really makes it difficult to get their jobs done. And, one of the things we do or one of the ways we help our clients is help them reduce their email volume by about 50%. And it sounds crazy, but it's doable. But it's amazing to me that the inefficiency of what we do by email, and we really don't, we feel like we're victims of email. People will say to me, gee, Bob, you don't understand. I get 150 emails a day. And of course, my question is, well, why? What are you doing about that? And so email has to be managed. You're right. You've got to be able to teach people the proper use of email. But you've also got to be able to understand just philosophically that the email has very limited use in an organization. And there's just nothing that trumps face-to-face communication unless it's just something very basic.
It is amazing to watch a team that will fiercely debate and try to decide something over email and then get together for their weekly meeting. And the only thing covered is, a recap of the week's objectives and business, which could have very easily had been the email.
Yeah. So one other thing, Jeff, there's a great book out there called The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. It's about the secrets of highly successful groups. What Daniel did is he went and spent time with really successful groups, sports teams, businesses, military groups that were seen as successful in everything they do. At the time when he wrote the book, the San Antonio Spurs had won 5 championships. They had the big three. He spent months with the Spurs and he wanted to identify behaviors of these healthy teams. He came up with a list of 10 things that all these successful teams did. What's amazing about it, thinking of communication, 8 of the 10 things that he identified that was common amongst these teams all had to do with communication. Things like profuse amounts of eye contact, lots of short energetic exchanges, lots of questions, intensive active listening, humor and laughter, small courtesies like thank yous, opening doors. So out of the 10 things that were the behaviors that differentiated these teams, 8 had to do with communication. So it's critically impactful for healthy cultures and healthy teams.
Yeah, that doesn't tell you just how important this is. Again, if trust is the foundation, communication is the catalyst to everything else. Now, if you can't communicate effectively as a leader, your chances of getting them through change or keeping them customer focused or developing them or building the team or really ultimately even getting the results are gone. And that's why this is number 2 on the list. And that's why it's so important to learn to get this stuff right. The clarity has to be there. The listening has to be there. The prioritization of the right kind of communication and face-to-face and with context has to be there. And if you get those things right, it will enable all of the rest of these to be able to accelerate. But if you are doing this one wrong, it will trip you up on anything else you try as a leader. And that's why we wanted to spend so much time on it. And that's why it's so critical and important to what we're doing. And that's why it's an absolute key competency for our leaders to be able to do this and do it well. Well, I think we have communicated our ideas on this one pretty succinctly and pretty completely. So nice work, guys. Thank you, of course, to Bob and Matt for being with me again.
Enjoyed it, Jeff. Thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're a leader out there thinking about, we talked about a lot of things. The Communicating Effectively class talks about a lot of things. But just look in the mirror and think, hey, what are one or two things that I can do differently that I'm either not doing or I need to do more of around communication, and commit to them. Share that idea with someone else that can hold you accountable and start making those incremental changes, which I think we're going to talk more about change here in one of the ensuing episodes. So more to come on that.
Absolutely. And make it a habit, folks. That's the real secret to this, is communication works when you work at it. So make it a habit and make it a priority, and it will enable so much more for everything else we want to accomplish as leaders. Thanks again to my guests, and thank you all for listening so actively on the other end of this podcast. We were glad to have you, our best listeners ever with us for this one. So thank you very much. We'll catch up with you next time on the next episode of Calibrating Your Compass here on Brigham University Podcast.